Coming up on Tech News Today, Tech Dirt protects itself from the not creator of email. Also, Amazon is looking for a city to drop its next U.S. HQ into. Touch ID apparently won't be in the next iPhone. We knew that, but apparently that wasn't always the plan. And one of the three major credit reporting businesses in the U.S. was hacked, and that's a big deal. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1848, recorded Thursday, September 7th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Tracker, a coin-sized tracking device that pairs with your smartphone and keeps you from losing your most valued possessions. Visit thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT to save 20% off any order.
Hello, welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we deliver the tech news on a silver platter to trying to keep Jason from napping.
I almost fell asleep.
Is that
your platter? I have a silver platter with an Android logo on it, and we're going to dollop some tech news on top, maybe do a little curly Q at the top to make it look delicious and delightful, and deliver it to you.
Perhaps a little sprig of parsley to
Tech news. Yeah, I was going more the dessert, like ice cream route, like a soft serve ice cream. Okay. But yeah, parsley could work too.
Maybe cinnamon?
Sure.
I'm Megan Maroney.
And I'm Jason Howell. Let's do this, Megan.
Okay. Charles Harder, the lawyer who represented Hulk Hogan in his case against Gawker, failed to have the same success with his latest case against TechDirt. A judge in Massachusetts dismissed the case against the tech news site that was brought by Shiva Ayadurai, a man who claimed that he invented email in the 1970s. TechDirt had criticized Ayadurai's claim on its site to the point that the non-inventor of email called it libel. The judge sided with the small but influential TechDirt in the $15 million case. Now the same lawyer is going after Gawker's sister site, Jezebel, for calling a bizarre therapy group a cult. So, of course, Gawker no longer exists due to the lawsuit. They were lawsuited out of business. And the lawsuit, of course, was founded by funded by PayPal founder Peter Thiel. However you feel about Gawker, that case, which was, I guess, was it last year or 2 years ago? I can't even remember.
Yeah, it was last year.
Yeah. It seems dangerous that millionaires can fund lawsuits to take down small news sites. I think journalism has it hard enough. They don't need that kind of nonsense
to deal with on top of everything else.
Yeah. I am not a fan of frivolous lawsuits. And I'm not, because it's, you still have to pay for, you know, I mean, TechDirt could have gone out of business easily.
They absolutely
won the case and gone out of business. The founder, Mike Masnick, says this was a win for free speech and especially the ability to call out public figures, which is somewhat missing now that Gawker is gone.
Right, yeah. I mean, the whole Gawker lawsuit could potentially have set a precedent. The fact that this didn't follow in its footsteps, like Mike said, is a win for proving that you can call out, you know, public figures in the media, in the press, and not, you know, be basically sued out of existence for it. I mean, that's what free press is all about, right? Being able to do that. Shiva is apparently running for U.S. Senate in Massachusetts. So, I mean, I just feel like this is a more and more we're hearing about kind of critical views against the press. And I have a feeling we're going to see more of this sort of stuff. So seeing this happen in this way, it was good news. Although Mike did say in his post on TechDirt that he was disappointed because California has very strong anti-slap laws that protect people and sites from expensive legal battles. In this case, this was the first time that the first district had to figure out whether California's anti-slap law would apply to Massachusetts, where Shiva's from. And in this case, they decided not to apply California's more stringent rules in that regard. Mike, of course, wished that that were the case, but it wasn't in this case. But regardless, I mean, you have to be happy about the fact that it's thrown out, you know. Mike also posted that they just launched a free speech edition of Tech Dirt, where they're going to focus more on that particular part of the site, on reporting around free speech issues, anti-slap law, and a whole lot more. So if this sort of story and this thread continues on, you're probably going to find a lot more of that over the free speech part of the Tech Dirt site. So check it out. See what you think. Amazon is on the prowl for a location to drop its second North American headquarters into. Maybe it'll deliver the headquarters with a drone. I don't know. Amazon is looking to support up to 50,000 employees in the facility when all is said and done. So the deal brings its share of incentives for whatever city is selected. And Amazon is coming out early with the news, as it's also looking to lock in whatever incentives it can from state and local communities to make it even more worth its while. Amazon set a deadline of 6 weeks for interested locations to submit their bid to be considered. They're looking for municipalities with more than 1 million people, with a healthy kind of job, a healthy sea of job potential people to work for Amazon that are smart. What is the word I'm looking for? I don't know. Megan, go.
People.
People.
Employable people.
Employable people. There we go. All right.
So they said that it'll be a full equal. They want it to be, quote, a full equal to the Seattle campus. Amazon, we should say, has been hiring. They've been on a hiring spree since acquiring Whole Foods. They've hired tens of thousands of new employees. But this is an interesting play for these cities. Basically, they're saying, like, hey, you guys, it's sort of like Hunger Games a little bit. You know, like, what are you going to give us? What, you know, we will give you us. What are you going to give us right in return? Now go. And a lot of places are sitting, you know, stepping up and saying, we'll give you whatever you want, Amazon. And others are pushing back a little bit, you know, saying, like, hey, this should be a give and take. This is what a lot of companies do. It's what, you know, they do it in different cities. They do it in different countries. You know, what kind of tax benefits Apple will look to places, other countries, what kind of tax benefits can I get? So it's no surprise, but it's usually a little more hidden than this. I mean, they basically put out a press release asking for, you know, who's going to volunteer as tribute city, basically. I mean, it could be great for cities. It could cause cities. I think Amazon's good that they'll probably want a city that will encourage a commitment to clean energy and transportation and, of course, jobs. Cities want jobs. So we'll see. I was thinking, like, I wonder if Houston would be the right place. I mean, this is, they are going to be rebuilding soon. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and often people do go to Houston for a job. It is an expensive place to live. And so I wondered if that, and I looked at the Houston Chronicle. They said that it might be, because some people have guessed Austin, but I don't think Austin is big enough. It doesn't have the amount of people living there that Amazon would want.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of chatter about Austin. I mean, everybody now is saying, well, what about here? What about here? I think they should go here. And Amazon basically saying for these areas that might be interested, between 2010 to 2016, it brought in $1.40 to the Seattle economy for every dollar it invested in its Seattle business. And that totaled around $38 billion translated. So obviously this is big money. And it's Amazon that we're talking about, one of the biggest companies, right up there in, as far as commerce is concerned, period. Hopefully they're okay with drones as well, because I could see a bunch of drones taken off from here if they pick the right city.
And free bananas.
And free bananas, right. Yes. Hopefully they love bananas as well. Mm-hmm.
The Wall Street Journal reports that Apple will experience extended supply shortages on the new iPhones that might extend all the way into the holiday season. The new phones, expected to be announced on Tuesday, might not be available for at least a month due to manufacturing decisions, according to people familiar with the matter. The new phone, reportedly called the iPhone 8 or just iPhone or possibly iPhone Pro or iPhone X, it won't come with a Touch ID, and sources say that that's what's causing the holdup. Apple reportedly had intended to include the fingerprint sensor. This is the new part of the story. It sounds like we've heard the story over and over again. But the new sources say they meant all along to put the fingerprint sensor in there, but then they had to abandon it for the new facial recognition technology. So Well,
how does that sound to you? Like, that sounds very un-Apple to me. But maybe, I mean, I guess we don't really actually know the machinations of what happens at Apple and how they produce their products. But when I think of Apple and I think of their technology and what they include, I think more about intention than I do. It just didn't work with the screen technology, so we had to abandon it because we've got to go to market with something, especially something as critical, or at least has been as critical in the last couple of years as fingerprint sensors have become. Over the past 2 or 3 years, they've been, you know, just like a pretty standard feature that people expect. So that facial recognition, if they're abandoning it for facial recognition, better be 100% spot on. And if the reason that they decided to not include the Touch ID sensor is because it didn't work with the screen technology, that worries me a little bit, I guess. But obviously, Apple's going to, you know, take some time getting it out. And I have a hard time seeing Apple just like rushing something out and having it not work for everybody. It's probably going to be at a certain point, but that decision seems very un-Apple to me for some reason.
Yeah, I mean, this is definitely the season where we're digging around to try to find all of the Apple news that we can find, and we're just waiting. It's just days until we can figure out whether it's going to have that facial recognition technology or not.
Yeah.
And we also hear about supply constraints stories every year at this time too. It's part of the story. It's part of, you know, wanting to wait in line, and people don't wait in lines anymore, but there still always is a certain kind of excitement around, like last year it was the piano black phone. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get that. The year before it was the rose gold phone.
True.
You couldn't get that one. So there might be something, but I think this is definitely different because I do believe the rumors that the iPhone 8 is going to be really expensive. I do believe that those rumors are true. And I think that's different. And I think people are going to get very upset about how much it costs. But I thank you, Kevin. But I think they're making the right choice there, because I think that why not charge as much as someone will pay for a phone?
I mean, it's
not like you don't need, it's not like we're depriving people of the iPhone 8. It's not fair. Like you don't have $1,000.
Yeah.
Why not let people pay that much? And then it will fund, you know, innovation in some other way. And eventually all those technologies will be available to people that can afford them. It's the same thing as, you know, the Tesla was super expensive and now there's a less expensive Tesla. Mm-hmm.
And the Apple Watch once had a $10,000 gold model?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they decided eventually that maybe that wasn't such a good idea, but they tried it.
Right.
They did it. And, it really does seem like all signs are pointing to this being a pretty darn expensive phone. Ming-Chi Kuo estimates that Apple's paying $120 to $130 for the Samsung displays that are being used. That's compared to $45 to $55 for the current LCD displays. That's a huge markup when you're talking the amount of volume that they're doing for these devices. So very expensive. I'm very curious to see how much they'll be able to support the market. But because there are plenty of people that are going to be willing to pay it, even though it's going to be more expensive. And Apple knows that. You know, the true hardcore fans that buy every year, that always want to buy the best iPhone that there is, will be okay with spending more than $1,000 for this phone. So that's just the way it is.
Some things will never change.
It's true. It's true. They should make a song out of that. Facebook is testing out a new feature that could result in true love for some of its users, or maybe just a beer at the local pub. Same difference. Jacob Dubay from Motherboard noticed a new feature appearing last night in the Facebook app that presented him with a new way to meet up prompt. He was shown a number of profile photos of his friends with a question asking, "Want to meet up with," and then the name, "this week," along with an assurance that his response would be kept private unless that same person also indicated interest in meeting up. Sound familiar, Megan?
Yes. Although I've never used Tinder. It sounds like
about Tinder on the show many times. And actually, there are a lot of apps that have kind of followed this kind of paradigm, I suppose. So Facebook's getting into the game. And as we know very well about Facebook, they have no qualms about taking something that's very successful about another social network or another service and integrating it in. And they're doing tests all the time. This is currently only appearing in New Zealand and Toronto. And Facebook just basically says, hey, lots of people are using Facebook to make plans with each other. This is a way to do it. Though using the you only see my request if you also request it thing, you know, is very Tinder-like. It, you know, it's not connecting you with people that you don't already know. So at least there's that. It's not like random hookup service like Tinder is.
So this is weird. It seems, I don't know. Like, we just don't know enough about it. Is it really trying to find you a date among or is it really trying, like, will it look so deep into my Facebook friend network and see who are the other people that live in Petaluma that are about my same age? Maybe like Facebook knows I'm married. Maybe so it will only like recommend friends that are women. Will it find the women that I often like comment on their posts? Will it know if they're feeling lonely, if they miss it? I mean, like, how far are we going
here? Yeah.
Because, and you know, will it take into account the amount of times I make plans and then cancel them because I would rather go to sleep? That's what I would like to know. So
I hadn't thought about a couple of those things there. As far as the service, like, at first I was like, okay, well, I mean, if everybody's using Facebook to make, you know, to make plans with their friends, like, okay, this makes sense. But why would it need to be the kind of, like, it seems like a lot of work. If my thought is, I want to make plans with a friend of mine this weekend, I'm going to go through here and not tell all of these people, but tell Facebook that I'm interested in hanging out with all these people and hope that one of all of those people does the same thing for me. And then we can, you know, go hang out at a bar or something. Like, that seems like a lot of work for not a whole lot of payoff potentially, unless there is, like, on the Tinder side of things. I mean, one could argue there is probably a payoff there, right? Like, you use it for a very specific reason. So I don't know. It seems like a conflicted application of this in Facebook, applying this to your friends. You know what I mean? You're probably already communicating with your friends if you're actually interested in hanging out with them. So why do it in secret? Why, you know, that's a strange kind of veil to put over it.
Yeah. So it's weird. I don't really get it. We'll have to wait to see when it comes to. Well, I'll have to wait to see. You don't use Facebook anymore, so
nope.
I'll let you know. And if it tells me that asks me if I want to hang out with you, and I say yes, and nothing happens, then
you'll know why. Because I'm not even paying any attention whatsoever.
Because that's the thing. You still have your Facebook account, right?
I do. I just don't check it. But I think the point that you bring up, as far as like the emotional aspect, that Facebook's really good at reading users and determining emotion, determining intention. There's been a number of stories about that. That coupled with this, that could be really interesting. Kind of weird, if I'm actually honest. Mm-hmm. Up next, one of the top three credit reporting firms announced a hack that affects more than half of all U.S. adults. But first, let's take a minute to thank Tracker, the sponsor of this episode. There is a ritual that we're all too familiar with at this point. When we're looking for our keys, we're checking the obvious places first, right? You check the couch, you check your kitchen, you check your pockets. If they're in your pockets, you feel kind of stupid. If they're not, then you go to the weird places, bathroom, fridge, hamper. Then you start getting really creative. You know, maybe it's tucked away in your pillowcase. I don't know. I don't judge. 8 years ago, Tracker changed everything when they released their first tracking device, and now they've done it again with the all-new Tracker Pixel. With the Tracker Pixel, you'll never worry about losing your things again. Tracker Pixel is the lightest Bluetooth tracking device on the market. You place Tracker Pixel on whatever you tend to lose, be it keys, wallets, even your cat. It's small enough to fit on your smallest items. When you misplace an item that has a Tracker Pixel attached, you can use your smartphone and a 90 decibel alert will help you find it in seconds. It even has a powerful LED light so you can find your items if it happens to be dark in the room. Lose your phone, you just press the button on your Tracker Pixel and your phone will ring even if it was left on silent. You can even locate your item if it happens to be miles away, because every Tracker user is a part of the largest crowd locate network in the world. And Tracker's 30-day money-back guarantee means you truly have nothing to lose. So go to thetracker.com right now and enter promo code TNT. You're going to save 20% off any order. That's thetracker.com, promo code TNT for 20% off. And we thank Tracker for their support of Tech News Today. So another day, another monumental data exposing hack. This time, it might be easier to ask who in the U.S. wasn't involved instead of who was. And joining us to talk a little bit about the Equifax hack, their epic breach of security, is Ian Thompson from The Register. How's it going, Ian?
It's going pretty well. Then again, I don't work for Equifax. So.
Yeah.
There's
some people having a pretty bad day right now. Well, actually, a lot of people in the U.S. especially are having a bad day, even those that don't work at Equifax. When one of the three major credit reporting companies is breached, you know it's not going to be good. When did this happen and what kind of information was exposed exactly?
Okay, well, what they've said is around about mid-May, somebody managed to crack one of the applications on their website and use that to worm their way into some of the corporate servers. Now, they do say that the key credit scores and credit reporting servers weren't breached, and all that they lost was just credit card numbers, social security numbers of about 143 million Americans and an unnamed number of British people and Canadians as well. So, relatively small, nothing to worry about, as the CEO would no doubt say. And there's also, you know, there's a fair amount of stuff gone. Some driving license numbers have gone. And obviously, as you say, Equifax is one of the big three. The amount of data they hold on Americans and other people around the world is absolutely massive. And it does appear at this point as though the hackers had free rein in there from mid-May until July 29th when this was discovered and they managed to shut them down.
Do we have any information on kind of the technical aspects of the breach, what the point of weakness was? There's always a point of weakness that actually allowed someone to get in there and do their digging.
Yes, there always is a point of weakness, and usually it's human. But in this case, it does appear like it was an actual application which was subverted in some way. They've been very light on the technical details. Obviously, they've known about this for some time. They've had the FBI in. And when they made the announcement today, they had a pre-shot video with the CEO saying how sorry he was and doing his Uriah Heep impression. And they've got that side of things done. They're keeping quiet on the technical aspects at the moment, as is usual in these cases, because they don't want to prejudice any criminal investigations, which could be coming down the line later. Although that said, at least three executives at Equifax could be facing criminal prosecution, because it now appears that they sold off their shares immediately after the news of the hack broke internally before it was publicly announced.
Wow.
That seems pretty bad.
Yeah, that's one way to put
it. that's the polite way to put it. Obviously, I don't want to get taken off air, so I can't say how I'd say it. But allegedly, the chief financial officer sold nearly $1 million worth of Equifax shares 3 days after the hack was discovered internally. Another two senior executives are also accused of selling shares of, and so the three of them, I think it's a value of 1.8 million Equifax shares, which got sold off conveniently before this news came out.
Wow.
Now, it may be that was just coincidence and it was totally above board and, you know, there's nothing at all to worry about. And if you believe that, then I have a bridge to sell you. But
what bridge?
Oh, no. Well, I was thinking the Brooklyn, in fact. It's available at the moment at a very cheap price. All we're asking is a couple of million, and you can take it home with you afterwards. The timing on this looks dodgy as all hell, and I should imagine the SEC will be investigating. Although, given the SEC's recent record, they'll probably just ask for the money back with interest and give them a light tap on the wrist, as we saw earlier in the week. But, yeah, I mean, this is looking about as serious as it gets. 143 million Americans, so that's most of the adult population, will have had their social security numbers stolen, possibly their I think it's nearly 300,000, or no, just over 200,000 people have had their credit card data stolen. Another 189,000 people have had documents relating to credit, to their credit containing personal information stolen. So, yeah, this is major. I mean, we're discussing in the office. I don't think it would be possible to do a complete reissuing of social security numbers. I wouldn't trust the government to do it. But that's basically what we're talking about. You've got most of the adult social security numbers of Americans. It's a cock-up of monumental proportions.
So they will allow you to go to their website and see if you've been affected. I went there. I have to say I was a little wary.
The form looked weird.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, plus, you've also got to put the last six digits of your social security number in there. Yep. And you're like, sort of, hang on a second. Why do I trust you with this?
I know. Yeah, that is. I mean, you could call, they said, and they said they would be notifying people by mail.
Yeah.
I went ahead and did it. I'm kind of at the state of like, oh my gosh, doesn't everyone have my information at this point? But I went ahead and did it, and it said, looks like you've been affected. But then Jason did it, and others that I know that I've seen on Twitter have said, like, you have to wait 6 days. Your time to be checked is 6 days. I mean, would you recommend that people went and put their information in there to see if they've been affected or not?
I think the website is certainly secure. It would be, you know, company suicide to set up a website to check this stuff, demand personal information, and then have it hacked. I mean, Equifax's relationship would be down the U-bend completely if that happened. So I think you're probably okay putting your information in there. They do have a dedicated call center set up, and yes, they are sending out mail to those who have been directly affected. They're also, interestingly, offering identity theft protection and credit monitoring to everyone in the United States. Now, it just so happens this is a business that they're in, so they can offer it fairly cheaply. Whether or not you trust it, considering their IT security record, then that's another matter entirely.
Yeah, I mean, we get used to being offered identity theft protection in all of these leaks. It usually follows. It's like, oh, you get a year of da-da-da and you sign up for it. Should companies be offering more? I mean, how valuable is this? Is that at this point, do you think?
It's pretty valuable. I think one of the worrying trends I've seen over covering this stuff in the last couple of years, it certainly used to be the case that when there was a big data breach like this, the companies invariably offered you a year's free credit monitoring. But then in the last year, maybe year and a half, I've seen a number of companies admit they got hacked, usually some, you know, point of sale infections or something like that. They've lost a colossal amount of data, but they're not offering the identity protection, presumably as a cost-saving measure. We call them out in print when we do that, and I think customers should also call them out for doing that, because basically it's their muck-up, and they need to, you know, sort out and provide the tools to make sure that their mistake doesn't end up costing us money.
I mean, so how bad is it? I mean, we're talking about basically with the information, social security numbers, like you said, birth dates, addresses, some driver's licenses.
Yeah.
Basically, everything that you have to turn over when a bank wants you to prove that you're you, or when anyone needs to prove that you're you. I mean, so at this point, really, anyone can just go out and try, if they have this information, they can try to break into anything and they have all my information. So,
this data is an identity thief's best possible scenario. I mean, you've got social security numbers, you've got names, you've got addresses, driver's license details. I mean, this could be incredibly valuable to an identity thief. That said, the authorities are going to be on their guard for a while, but then once people get slightly slacker, then you could start using this to open false bank accounts, set up lines of credit. This is why this credit monitoring service is so important, because given this information, someone could set up any number of credit cards in your name, go on a spending spree, and you know, you'd be left with you probably wouldn't be left with the bill because they'd recognize it as fraud, but you'd certainly be left with a hit on your credit score and a not inconsiderable amount of trouble sorting this out. So, I mean, really, this is the holy grail, if you like, of identity theft. They've got everything they need at this point. And banks and companies are going to have to be really on their toes watching out for this stuff. And this is, as you say, we're having data breaches like this on, well, not quite this large, but we're certainly having data breaches on a regular basis now. And we're finding out about them because certain states have actually got laws in place saying that if you lose your customers' data, you should maybe tell them about it, which is essential. But I think if an identity thief who knows what they're doing gets hold of this data, then you really are in trouble unless you're keeping a very, very close watch on your finances.
Man, the idea of like starting over with social security numbers is a crazy thought. I wondered about that in this case. Like when you're talking about that many people and all their full social security numbers being out there, like that's the kit and caboodle right there. Like,
exactly.
Intense.
It's a huge number of people. And I don't know whether the government actually has the wherewithal to actually get social security. I mean, the ramifications and complications of that would be insane. But yeah, you, when you think, I mean, you've got US population is what, 320 million now? Of that, a sizable proportion of children. So yeah, you're looking at easily over half the adults in the US have now basically had their social security number tied into their name and other details, just ripped out and available for anyone who wants to buy from the archive.
We probably should just verify everyone through Facebook at this point because they're, I mean, Facebook.
No, Megan, no, no, bad idea.
Facebook claims there's more people on Facebook than there is actually than the census claims. So, I mean, it seems right to me.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but there are also a fair number of fake Facebook accounts. I mean, I know some people who've got two or three Facebook accounts, you know, they use for different purposes. One for dating, one for work, one for personal, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I saw that Facebook data as well, and I was kind of like, right, okay. We have this thing called the U.S. Census Bureau. You know, I don't know if Mark Zuckerberg's heard about it, but you know, generally they do fairly good testing on how many people are around.
All right. Well, undoubtedly, we're going to hear more about this whole Equifax thing. I'm very curious to see. I mean, we already know early results on Wall Street have not been good. And,
Shares down 13%.
Wow. All right. Well, just want to thank Ian Thompson from the Register so much for joining us. Ian, it's always a pleasure having you on. Thanks. And we'll check in with you next time as this story develops.
It was good fun. Have a great day.
Right on. You too. See you later.
We got some feedback.
Alrighty.
Ryan wrote in about our discussion a few weeks ago with Jeffrey Fowler from the Wall Street Journal about tech for seniors. Ryan writes, I was the first software engineer on the senior tablet project called the GrandPad back in 2014. I now lead the engineering team there, but I'm also extremely passionate about the topic. We mostly target seniors 75 plus who in many cases have never used a computer or have tried an iPad, got frustrated with how complicated it was, how many passwords and pins they had to remember, and how many spammy emails they received, etc. When we started, we saw the same kinds of things that you were talking about on your show. Most importantly, all the tech that we use today is designed for us. Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Google, no matter who they show in their advertising, they are targeting 15 to 50-year-olds. No doubt about it. I'm very passionate and thought you should know that designing tech for seniors is not hopeless. Thank you, Ryan. That was an interesting topic that we had, and it's good to know that there are products out there. I checked out the senior tab, and it looked pretty interesting. GrandPad, that's what it's called. The GrandPad.
Yeah.
GrandPad.
Nice name.
I looked at the the website, and it looks like an interesting product. Thanks for writing in.
Yeah, thank you for sending that. Also, thanks to TNT's fan of the day, Rob Collins on Twitter, who sent us this picture saying, and I'm a little creeped out by it, but I realize we did it to ourselves. We did this. He says, single black gloves are so useful, Jason. I watch with the gloves and dongle ready. Black gloves not required to watch TNT. I don't recommend it. Those black gloves are not very comfortable. Wear them.
It's good that he has his dongle ready, though.
Really happy that you can plug the headphones in at a moment's notice. So show us how you watch or listen to TNT. No gloves required. Just take a picture or record a video of yourself or your setup. You can post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT and we will find it.
When Disney announced last month that the company would start its own streaming service, it didn't confirm whether or not Marvel and Star Wars would be exclusive to the service. Now Disney CEO Bob Iger says if you want to stream Rogue One or Guardians of the Galaxy, you're not going to do so on Netflix or Amazon or Hulu. When the new Disney service opens in late 2019, it will be the exclusive home of all streaming Disney movies, including Marvel and Star Wars. They'll also show original series and other exclusive movies. Boo! Thumbs down to this. No cost has been announced for this service.
You know it's going to be expensive. This is not going to be an inexpensive service.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just tired. I don't want any more services.
This is the future right here. This is the world we live in. We wanted a la carte, and we finally got it, except instead of small amounts of money for limited networks, it's paying full prices per studio. Mm-hmm. Let it go, Disney, says Patrick De La Hante, filling in for Burke. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, where did you come from? I mean, this is the depressing future. Maybe we just all need to revert to using Netflix DVD and Blu-ray service.
Maybe, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Like, well, then we kind of get everything. It's not as convenient, but then we get everything in one service fee.
I don't want to do that. But you'll be happy to know that there are some Netflix Disney shows like Jessica Jones.
Okay.
That was called Jessica Jones that are based on Marvel characters, and those will continue.
Because they were produced by Netflix,
yeah,
in mm-hmm. collaboration mm-hmm. with, yeah, that makes sense. But that's so lame. All the stuff's going away. But then at the same time, Netflix is producing all of their own originals like that. But mm-hmm. you've got a lot of other originals that they're filling in the gaps. Yeah, it's really kind of turning into this world where it's a la carte studio. It's like, what's your favorite studio? Cool, you can sign up for that studio's services, streaming service, and get all of their catalog. It's just a different way of thinking about it, and it seems like it could be pretty expensive because I don't envision this thing coming out for anything less than like $8 a month. Like mm-hmm. that seems like a bottom, you know, a low amount for the content that they will have there. You know, we know they place high value on their content. The Star Wars franchise, the Disney franchises, all that stuff is going to be expensive. So, welcome to the future. TNT records live every Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv or leave us a short voicemail at 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter at TechNewsTodayTV.
And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Megan Maroney. And subscribe to our show, twit.tv/TNT. Subscribe. Even if you watch live, we want you to be able to subscribe too, because you should. We want you to.
We want you to subscribe. And I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director and editor, Kevin. Thanks to Patrick and Burke, both of them, for helping out here in the studio. And Anthony behind the scenes, because things happened today. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all tomorrow. Bye, everybody.